This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers.
How's it going?
Hey, not too bad. How are you?
Fantastic. We announced the last episode that we are ending the show at episode 240, and I don't speak for myself here, but I am just blown away by all the kind words from all the listeners, people that I never even knew had listened, and people that said they listened to everyone. And So everybody, thank you. From me, thank you.
Absolutely. Same here. I think it's sometimes when you do a podcast like this, it doesn't necessarily invite people to interact with the show that much, that I think you can sort of forget how many people actually do listen, you know, and you don't hear that much feedback, or we haven't typically been like a feedback heavy show. I mean, and I suppose we're not at the scale of a really large podcast where even 1% of your listeners equates to a lot of feedback, but I suppose the times when we get stuff wrong, people do send us feedback, and we've had a lot of great feedback over the years in terms of, you know, people just saying, well, you know, I work for this company and we do it this way, or I've been to all these schools and they do it that way, and that kind of information has been really useful. But I think it's just been a nice way to kind of round out the show, to know that even after 5 years, we've still got a lot of loyal listeners who have really found value. And I hope that's kind of, for me, Bradley, that's the legacy that I want for the show, is that we've helped people do their job, you know, that it's not just entertainment to listen to, but it's actually kind of like almost like a way of kind of getting training or something, if you like.
Yeah, I agree. And I've often looked at the show as like professional development for me. Number one, because I got to learn from you. And number two, particularly around our deployment times, it really forced me to articulate things in ways I probably wouldn't have normally, like out loud, and to think through things. And so it's very gratifying to hear in emails people say, hey, you really helped me with my last deployment. Like, so I like to think that we helped people make, you know, decisions that we agreed with or we knew were good. And so just blown away overall. So the wanted to run through kind of just a podcast about the podcast this week, just about just various aspects of it. And the first thing is like how the show was created, and I remember specifically kind of how the show was created. So I don't know if you remember this in as much detail as I do. I have a weird memory, and I remember random things. Okay. So you had a tweet, probably spring of 2012, and you were talking about enterprise Wi-Fi. And at the time, you were using Apple airport base stations. And you kind of made the comment, like, what am I getting with the enterprise system that I don't get with this? And so that time, I kind of pinged you in, and I didn't really know you that well. I followed you. I don't think you followed me.
I don't think so.
Hey, I'd love to show you what I use. And so we did kind of a Skype screen sharing session. And I showed you like the Hive Manager 4.0 interface from back in the day. And then you, a few weeks later, I think you had made a comment about Evernote. And I kind of made some comment like, it never did work for me, et cetera, et cetera. And we did another screen sharing session. You kind of showed me your Evernote workflow, and it really clicked for me for many years. And then we kind of, at that time, thought, you know, these were interesting conversations. Maybe other people would have liked to have listened. And that's kind of my memory, how the show was made.
Yeah, no, I remember that very, very well, particularly the Aerohive one, because I remember just being so kind of blown away by all the things that I had been missing, you know. And I think that kind of goes back to also what you were saying about, you know, looking at it as CPD or whatever, that you know, the teacher and I suppose the sysadmin to a certain extent who works alone doesn't develop very well. And I think that's something I've always been quite conscious of, being somebody who works in a small school where, well, A, I'm the only teacher of my subject, and B, I'm the only sysadmin. So in a way, it's great. I get to do everything I want exactly the way I want it, but you better hope that the way you want it done is a good way of doing it, you know? And I feel for people in every school who have to work alone, and in many cases the IT department are often the people who do have to work alone, because of the, it's often seen as just a cost center in the school. So I think I remember that very well, you know, being kind of blown away by how much I was missing in terms of thinking about enterprise Wi-Fi. And not long after that, we went to Aerohive, and now we're onto Unify after a recent deployment as well. But yeah, no, that was how we got started, and it's who was to know what was going to come from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's someone mentioned sent it to me. I said, you know, I don't mean this to sound, this is not really, I guess, it says anything just about our discipline to show up every week, but I don't know many podcasts that have been around as long as ours, kind of ongoing. I know, obviously, especially in the tech community, obviously Mac Power Users has been, then I think obviously the talk show has been around in various iterations for a number of years. But you know, and so, and again, I would not say we're one of the best podcasts. And there's tons that are better than us, but I am proud of the fact that we did show up for so many years. And, you know, there's a lot of things I've often said, I can't control my talent, but I can control my effort. And I'm proud of that. So I wanted to run through some of the technical stuff about this podcast. So Fraser,
people always want to know how podcasts are made. It's something they're fascinated by.
It is. And it's really quite simple, and can be quite complicated as well. So, we'll start with microphones. What microphone do you use?
So right now I'm sitting in front of a Blue Microphones Yeti, which is quite a common kind of podcaster mic. It's a USB mic, and I record that directly. These days I record it directly onto my iPad. At times past we would record it onto a Mac, but at the moment the show is recorded and edited on iPad.
Yeah, I'm using the Blue Yeti as well with a pop filter. I originally started with a Blue Snowball, which is kind of a cheaper model, and both they're both fine. I mean, they are fine. So where do we record? Just about everywhere. Yeah. I typically record at school, towards the end of my day. And I know you're 5 hours ahead of me, so you are at home in the majority of time.
Yeah. For the most part, the summer and holiday episodes tend to be a little more confusing, but I just wrote down some of the places where at least I've recorded, and you've probably been in some of these as well, but, we recorded in hotels. I've literally recorded episodes in a caravan. I did that before. I did it one time, and my wife was sitting in the room, and she was just killing herself laughing at how pompous I sounded on the podcast. She's like, "You're an idiot." So I actually had to put her out of the room because I couldn't. because it was one of those shows. We've done some of them where I do the show by myself sometimes, you know, or whatever, and that was one of them, because I think it was because I didn't have any 3G where I was, so I had to edit the show offline and then get in my car and go and upload it somewhere on the edge of the 3G network. She was just laughing so hard I couldn't actually I couldn't complete the show with her in the room. So did that. We did holiday homes. You've recorded on location as well. I think that was kind of one of my favorite shows, was Bradley Reports for Misty.
Yeah, we just really anywhere. And that's the beauty of the medium is, gosh, you can get it started for like less than $100 and hardware-wise. And you can do it really anywhere. And that's the – I love – gosh, I tell a story often about the interesting part of Apple adding podcasts in iTunes 4.9 is Twitter was created out of that, because Odeo was the big directory before that. And once iTunes did it, Odeo was really dead. And that's when they went on to create Twitter. And gosh, it's such a simple technology in a lot of ways. Software-wise, so I want to explain this a little bit. So typically podcasters do what is called double enders. And that is where, right now I'm recording on my Mac in two programs. One is QuickTime, and it's recording like my local stream. So Skype doesn't impact that at all. And that's really the ideal way to do it, where you're each recording your own local stream. That way you just kind of, you know, have multiple copies. And then, so when we go to edit, you've typically done most of the editing. You literally have my local stream. It's like kind of an uncompressed file, but I'm also using a program called Skype Call Recorder. And what that's doing is it plugs into Skype. And, I guess we should say that we use Skype for pretty much every episode. And, apparently you're supposed to thank Skype every 15 minutes. That's kind of the new thing. Apparently
we're a bit late for this, but thanks Skype.
Thank you, Microsoft, for all the Skype over the years. And what Call Recorder does is actually records the audio stream, and then I can split it up afterwards. And so that could be a way you could just do all shows as well, but we just kind of do
some
it this
people
way.
Do.
And that's fine. And that typically when we had guests, we would do it that way. Like I wouldn't ask them to try to like record their local stream and get it to me in the right format. I would just record the stream.
Yeah, you see that if you listen to a podcast where you've got two really high quality voices and one poor quality voice, that's typically what they're doing, is they've got a guest where the guest maybe doesn't have a good environment for recording or a good microphone or something, but they still want the guest to be on the show, so they'll do that. And the two regular hosts have got the good microphones and the good treatment of their voices and stuff like that. So that works too, but it's best to have, you know, high quality recording at all ends if you can do it.
Now, software-wise on the web, we have used Buzzsprout since the beginning to host our website, and then to host the podcast feed, and then Feedburner is on the front end, and that would cost. I'm surprised Feedburner is still alive. That's owned by Google. It's kind of an analytics thing on the front of your podcast. I'd
forgotten that was part of the move.
Yeah, everybody thinks it was like rumored to be dead back in 2013, but it's still alive. And then the actual website is hosted on WordPress.com. So we originally planned to do everything on Squarespace. And you can host a podcast RSS feed on Squarespace. And it's really nice because it's just kind of like one place. Because right now when I upload it, I have to get everything ready for Buzzsprout, which is, again, our podcast hosting platform. And that's what you see in Apple Podcasts and Overcast and Pocket Cast, like all that data. Well, then I have to redo it in WordPress, and I embed the audio file from Buzzsprout in there. Well, we originally planned to do it all on Squarespace, but like this was just right when Squarespace 7 had launched, and they had some major issues with their podcast section, and they wasn't valid with iTunes at the time. And so we just kind of had to port it. And if I was starting it today, I would probably honestly do everything through like either Simplecast or Fireside, which is Dan Benjamin at 5x5's podcast platform. I'd probably use one of those because you can kind of do everything inside of one. Buzzsprout has that, but their websites aren't as nice as the other ones. But they've been a good partner. We've obviously been with them since 2012, and they've worked every time, and it's fast. So that's kind of the web software that we use.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you've really taken care of most of that side, Bradley, over the years, and I really appreciate that. I've been more of the editor, and you know, I'll deliver to you a finished MP3 file through Google Drive, and then you take over and do all that kind of work on the back end, and that's how we get the show out.
Well, that's one of the things I forgot about. In the beginning, we used to do the show notes on Evernote, and at some point, probably around episode 100, we moved it all to Google Drive. Simultaneous editing wasn't there in Evernote, and I don't think either, probably still isn't, but it is in Drive. So all of our show notes and files are done on Google Drive.
Yeah, I mean, Google Docs is becoming as important to podcast as Skype is, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it just works. It really, really does. What kind of software do you use on your end?
Yeah, so we've done different things in times past. I mean, I can't remember exactly how we did the very first episodes. I think we probably were using GarageBand for those on the Mac. And then once we kind of outgrew GarageBand a little bit, I got into recording with Adobe Audition and editing with Adobe Audition for a while, which is a fantastic audio editor. It's absolutely outstanding. I mean, the stuff that you can do with Adobe Audition in terms of like recovering a really bad recording on one end is outstanding. I mean, you can pull out, like, if a police car goes past, you can take the siren out while not affecting the rest of the audio. It's incredible. But that was what we used for many years. And then when I made the move to iPad full time, one of the things that made that possible was the existence of iPad specific recording and editing apps. And I'll talk a little bit later about some of the early experiments in doing that. But today we use Ferret Recording Studio on the iPad, which is one of the outstanding iPad apps. I mean, I've got Adobe Audition available to me, and I actually prefer to use Ferret. It's actually faster for me to work in Ferret because of some of the features. It's really, really tuned. I mean, I think my understanding is that the guy who, Canis, who writes Ferret, he basically listens to what Jason Snell wants in podcast editing and just builds it into the app because it's so really tuned to doing podcast editing. It's really cool. And I think we should maybe mention, Bradley, also just like how much editing we actually do of the show. You know, because some podcasts are very produced. You know, a podcast like Cortex, for example, or I suppose to a certain extent ATP or something like that. Their stuff comes and goes, and you know, Mike Hurley often says that, you know, they talk for about 4 hours to get one podcast for Cortex. We don't really do that. We're very much a kind of one and done kind of podcast. I think If there's background noise, because we're not, neither of us are recording in recording studios, if there's background noise, I'll edit that out. Or the most I normally do is I delete the silence on either one of our tracks. So when I'm speaking like now on your track in the edit, Bradley, I will delete the quietness, if you like, just so that any little bits of background noise don't come through. And sometimes, like in the summer, when you've got your air conditioner running in the building, you can tell a difference, because when your voice comes back in, there's a bit of air conditioner hum in the background and so on. But that's about as much editing as I do. And we do screw up occasionally, don't get me wrong, and I'll fix that. But with Skype, it's sometimes hard not to talk over each other at the beginning and ending of something you're saying. But that's about the extent of the editing that we'll do. It's not, we don't have a lot of material that ends up on the cutting room floor.
Next section is about sponsors, how we found them. And really, most of them, they found us. I know we probably had a sponsor after like four episodes, and they had emailed us. And I really would, I think you're to credit for that, because you are much more well-known then and now than I am. And so I know that Jamp was one of our big long-term sponsors. And I think we had a listener kind of connect us with them. And we are, so I don't remember who that was, very, very grateful. And they basically found us. And I think one of the things that made our show unique was it's a very focused show. So it's about educational technology. And so most of the companies that sponsored us have, now we weren't the biggest show, but most of the companies that sponsored us were very kind of low volume, high margin type products. So like if one person bought Jamp off a year long sponsorship, Jamp made its money back, like, probably depending on the size of the bundle, like three or four times. Companies that sold widgets most of the time didn't sponsor us. We did have some app companies, but the majority of it was like kind of bigger products.
Yeah, and that noticeably tailed off. You know, that was kind of like in the middle of the show when there was when the iPad gold rush was happening for apps, if you like, Bradley. But I think the economics of the App Store is such that you're big spending, VC funded apps are not really in the education space that much, and if they are, they're not trying to sponsor to get to individual teachers. They're kind of, if you're a VC funded app, you're kind of going in at the district level, and you're saying, right, we want to sell to your whole district and have some administrator adopt it rather than people working in school specifically. So Jamf is a little bit different in that respect. I mean, I'm sure they do that too, but they're also quite used to kind of going school to school and getting people to sort of professionalize their iOS developments with their product.
One thing I didn't put on the outline, but I thought about, we had the husband of a listener do our artwork. Well, our second artwork. I think my wife may have done the first artwork, and then we had a listener's husband do this. And I don't remember his name, and he was so gracious. And I literally, because I just thought about it, And we had a time we were kind of featured on the iTunes podcast store, and he kind of upsized it for us and made some different sizes. And again, his name will come to me at some point, and if I can remember it, I'll mention next show. But yeah, that we had a listener's husband do the artwork, and he just came out of the blue and did it for us. That was nice.
Yeah, no, I always appreciate that. I've always loved that artwork. It's got such a lovely kind of combination of traditional and digital, with the sort of the book icon, but also the iPad on the cover as well.
So the next thing is kind of want to talk about is the community building aspect of the show. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was really my favorite part of it, is just the people that we met. Like, it's like there are people that we like have iMessage conversations with that are listeners that look like we're friends. And that to me is the best part of the show.
Yeah, no. And I've traveled a lot and spoken a lot about iPad programs and things like that we've done in the school. And it's always remarkable to me, like, it doesn't really matter where I go in the world. If I go to an education event, somebody will come up and say, "Oh, I love your show." And that to me is so great. And it's one of the things that is, I always find it so strange about education, that no matter where you go in the world, education is the one thing that you can pretty much have in common with anybody. And it's remarkable how similar schools are across the world, not how different they are. You know, if I go to Japan, and I've had people from Japan come to my school, I have been to South Africa a couple of times, been to the States many times, visiting schools, talking to teachers. And we all have the same kind of issues, you know, and there are local differences. You know, you go to South Africa, a big issue is the lack of bandwidth, for example. They have some issues with crime and safety and things like that that we don't have in other countries. But still in all, you know, you go to the States, testing is a big thing, and how do you fit the iPad into a testing regime and other things like that. And then if you go to somewhere like Scandinavia, they're very much into the creativity aspect of it and things. And it's fascinating for me to see that, but also to find everywhere I go, there are listeners to the show as well. And it's very, you know, I've always been delighted whenever somebody comes up and says, you know, listen to the podcast and really appreciate it. So thank you, everyone.
So we did have one show that no one has ever heard, and there's just one. It was The Lost Show, and I think we both had technical issues. I know my Mac hard froze, and I think you were using your iPad, so you didn't have my stream. And
I seem to remember I was in a caravan that time,
yeah,
as well, so it was on really bad 3G.
So there's one show, I don't even remember the topic, that was probably 2 years ago. I think we just skipped that week, but there's one show that no one heard, and I have zero idea of the actual topic.
Yeah, it wasn't an important one, I don't think.
So I wanted to run through our favorite episodes of the show, and I will let you go first.
Okay, I think there's one show that I think is quite notable, which is our episode 55, which was entitled From a Bunker, which was, to my knowledge, the first podcast that was recorded, edited, and published entirely on an iPad. And this was September 2013, and I was on a trip to Chicago. I was speaking at, I think, the C4 conference there, or maybe SecondConf, I'm not sure, and probably C4 at that point. And I remember it very distinctly because I had the worst iPad ever made, which was the third generation iPad, the first Retina one. And we recorded in my hotel room in Chicago, and then I recorded and edited it using an app called Aura, A-U-R-I-A, which was a kind of quite basic but workable audio recorder and editor. It's quite like Ferrite today, except it was very much, it had a lot of desktop thinking on it. So where Ferrite is very kind of gesture-based and you can swipe to cut and things like that, Aura was very much not that kind of tool. And I remember it also because it took so long to convert it to MP3. I mean, it was more than 1-to-1. So we had about an hour show, and it took me about an hour and a half to 2 hours to encode that file into MP3, which was, and then the iPad got very hot at the time. I was quite concerned about it. So that was one that I particularly enjoyed. And another one, if you remember, was called Against the Smart Classroom, which was episode 58. And I was really enjoying going back through all these old episodes and trying to remember what they were all about. But this one, I've remembered it ever since the day we recorded it, because what we did in that show was we took a book by a guy called Adam Greenfield called Against the Smart City, which is about, it's a kind of treatise against the deleterious aspects of smart city technology and how it could affect behavior. And we tried to apply that kind of thinking to the classroom. And that was a time in 2013 when things like the Amplify tablet, remember the Amplify tablet, were really big. And it was all about things like class discipline systems that sort of hooked into iPads, so you could get a demerit for looking at the wrong web page on your iPad and stuff like that. And we had a number of concerns about that. And I think that kind of came through in that episode. And I was really, really gratified because a while after this, and I don't know if I ever sent this to you, Bradley, Adam Greenfield had somehow found our show. Somebody had referred him to the show. And he wrote a tweet in which he said something like, these guys get it. This is why I write. And this is the kind of thinking that should come from this book. And he was very pleased with the whole thing as well. So that was, I really felt that we hit the mark with that episode in a way that I would have liked to have hit the mark every week, but you can't always have a great show. What else have we got in here? We've got the deployment series. I think you'll probably talk about those as well, Bradley. We did episode 110 and 111, where we did the case for Chromebooks and the case against Chromebooks, which I thought, I liked those two shows because they were a real example of the idea of strong opinions weakly held, where you want to work on the best case you can possibly make for, and then the best case you can possibly make against, strong cases for and against something that you're interested in. And, you know, Chromebook is kind of a theme that has sort of come and gone with us over the years, I think in inverse proportion to how much I'm annoyed by Apple software. So just yesterday I was thinking about a Chromebook again. I thought those were two really good shows, and they were the kind of thing that I found those very helpful myself, because in times when I've been like, do we stick with iPad or do we go to Chromebook? Doing those shows really can help me clarify the reasons why we stick with iPad. So that those are probably still worth going back to, and I think they hold up pretty well. You want to do some, and then I've got a few more, but you want to dive in and do a few years?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Chromebook ones are, I'm still making that argument today in my head. It depends on, you know, it's tough, and especially if, as Chrome becomes more tablet-like,
and as the apps get worse on iOS,
right? It's again, I think you said it right. It's strong opinions loosely held. So my favorite ones probably were the deployment series, and I think those were really fun, and they're really different from 2014 to 2016. Things changed a lot. Things got a lot more clarity in 2016 with how you deployed iPad specifically, in terms of the best practices. I mean, I think they were also just helpful for me for making sure I was doing things right. And I think if anything, those maybe not the technical aspects, but more the high level aspects of those series really still stand up today. Even the 2014 one of just So those were some of my favorites. Now a recent favorite, because I feel like it's kind of like perfect way to sort of end the show, was episode 234, Which Mac Should Fraser Buy? And the fact that you own a Mac again, I think, is kind of funny, because certainly you owned a Mac when we started, but like along the way, you ditched the Mac for iPad only, and now you own a Mac again. And there's various reasons for that. And I think it's just, I don't know, it's like come full circle. Just like we've kind of had multiple kids, we've come and gone on computing types.
Yeah, and I think that whole kind of journey, if you like, is another example of strong opinions weekly held. Like, the iPad is the best computer for me until it's not the best computer for me anymore, and then we'll change again. But I'm still, of course, you know, a huge fan of iPad and use it every single day. But there's, you know, your life changes and your tasks change and things like that as well. And I think some of the things that I do today are quite different from the things that I did just even 2 years ago. So we will talk more about that in future show.
Another one is episode 94 is 1-to-1 in 1999. It was an episode with Daniel Milbank of Girls Preparatory School, and about them going 1-to-1 laptop in 1999, which is obviously a long time ago. And then when you came and visited, I don't know if many listeners remember that, we got to meet once, I guess maybe 2014 time. You came, you were in North Carolina, and then you flew over here and spent a couple of days, and you got to speak at Girls Preparatory School with Daniel. It was kind of a good win, because it obviously was, you got paid to speak, but it was good for Daniel because he didn't have to pay for your travel, because you were already coming here anyway. Yeah. So it was kind of a win-win for everybody. And Daniel's a good friend, and I thought it was a fun episode to record with him. Another one I love is episode 1. And just because I think that was, I mean, we did it. And you know, I can always say I was a podcaster for 5 years, and it's really due to episode 1. And again, I couldn't, there's no part of me that could even go back and listen to that in the slightest. I'm sure it's terrible, and I don't pretend to be great now, but I would like to think I'm better, you know, 5 years later than I was then. Oh, I'm sure it was bad, but again, I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of what we've done. And my last favorite is episode 207, the unofficial history of the first 1-to-1 iPad program, because really, without that, there is no show. Without your iPad program, there never would have been an out of school.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was a good one. And I was very pleased to have that put down, you know, as just an archival story about how did we come to, because I'll forget that detail eventually. There's details I've already forgotten. But it's nice to have that as a permanent archive of, you know, my reflections after, what would that be, you know, 7 years or so of that program. I've got a couple of others, Bradley, just to mention. Episode 128, I did an interview with my friend Shuni Swaminathan, who is a teacher in low-income communities in India. And he, you know, we've never made people cry with an episode except that one episode. And I told the story in that episode, and I'll tell it again, of he and I met in person when we were both speaking at the Apple European Leadership Summit in London. And I want to say maybe 2012 or something like that. And there was the main track of the show was going on, and then there was this inspiration track, and he and I were part of the inspiration track, and it was the worst speaking engagement I ever had, because he got up and he told his story about how he has to run a marathon to raise money to buy one iPad for his school, and then after him, you know, people are like crying and opening their checkbooks and stuff, and then after him, I've got to get up and say, well, I work at a private school, and we did a one-to-one iPad program on the first August they were available, you know, and people are just like, who is this guy, you know? But you know, I love Srini, and most people who meet him do as well, and he's one of these guys who just you can't help but go away inspired from talking to him, and he's visited our school a couple of times, and we've always had I've always gained something from listening to his perspective as well. So that was one show. We did episodes 150 to 154. Do you remember we did a series about The Diffusion of Innovations, the book by Everett Rogers?
That's a great book.
That's a great book, and I love those shows, because what I kind of feel about that from my point of view is that marked a transition in my thinking from just, you know, here's an idea, I've done it, now what, sort of trying to work backwards from doing the thing to what was the basis for doing it, if you like. You know, because, I mean, you got to remember, like, I was just a guy trying to make my school better in some way, and that was what we kind of hit on as one of the ways we could make it better. And I didn't have years of feasibility studies behind me or anything like that. I just had a bias for action. So we did it, and we sort of figured out as we went, because, I mean, who would you go to, right? You know, there were laptop programs or one-to-one programs, and we certainly used some of that research. But that whole diffusion of innovations part sort of marked a change in my thinking from just being an action-orientated sysadmin and teacher to having a more theoretical basis for understanding the role of change in schools. And I think that that's the kind of thinking that, okay, it's ostensibly about technology. We certainly applied it to technology adoption in the school, but you could apply that kind of diffusion thinking to any change you want to make in the school. You want to introduce a new discipline system. You want to introduce a new, I mean, just a few weeks ago, I introduced a new procedure for what doors we go in and out of at the beginning and end of the day. And it's really improved the school, but it took some time for everybody to get on board with that, you know. And something as simple as that, you look at it and you go, okay, here's our early adopters, here's our laggards and so on, and here's the majority, the early and late majority and so on. So I still recommend that book to people, and I've actually been recommending it to the school board recently as well. It's a great book to be familiar with. Two more. Episode 161 was, we talked about the history of iPad deployment. I think it was a fun show. We sort of went through all the different kind of eras of iPad deployment, and how did we do it back in the day? How did we do it in the sort of 2013, 2016 period? And how do we do it today? So that was one. And the last one, which is another show that I'm quite proud of having done, was a show that I did with Nicholas Cole Farrell called Thinking About Seymour, in which Nicholas reflected with me on his visit to MIT. There was a day of seminars and presentations about the kind of life and work of Seymour Papert, who is one of my kind of personal heroes in edtech. And I think that he's one of the people who more educational technology should know more about and understand his ideas as much as possible. And I think I was very pleased to have got that information from Nicholas as well. So I know you're listening, so thanks, man, for that. I appreciate you coming on the show.
So next up on the outline is thoughts on being mildly internet famous.
Yeah, how does it feel?
I
kind of like it.
I like the level that I'm at. I don't want to be at Marco Arment popular.
That seems like a lot of work, I have to say.
It does. And I feel like you get nitpicked a lot. And so I feel like I have I have enough of a social following where I can get help. If I ask a question, I can get really actually good answers, and I have a good community. But I don't feel like I've got people that are following me to be mad at me, if that makes sense.
yeah, there's not a guy who's constantly, well, actually, you're wrong about this and that and the next thing. That would be annoying. I don't have that, you know, and you know, I'm not sure how many followers I've got on Twitter now. It's in the tens of thousands, at least, you know, 15s of thousands. But I could count on, you know, the fingers of one hand, maybe two hands, how many genuinely negative interactions I've had online, either on Twitter or something else. And I think I'm always very conscious that it's, having done this iPad program and having kind of achieved the status of being the first person ever to really do it in a school, it's the privilege of a lifetime to be able to essentially, Bradley, travel the world on the strength of your ideas. I mean, I always try not to take that for granted, because, you know, many people work way harder than me. You know, teachers want people to believe that teaching is the hardest job in the world, but in fact, you know, there's a guy who goes into the sewers of Mexico City in a diving suit and has to clear out dead dogs. I mean, that's a hard job. You know what I mean? Talking for money is not a hard job, and certainly getting paid to travel and talk about your ideas is an incredible privilege, and I never want to take it for granted. I mean, just today I got another invitation back to South Africa. I mean, that's what it's done for me, you know. And I'm just a guy from Greenock, right? And, you know, for people who don't know Greenock, it's not a very exciting place, and not a lot of very important things come out of Greenock at all. I mean, the last thing might have been the steam engine, and to be able to, you know, in a way, put Greenock on the map, put a little school on the map. I mean, people are not really interested in a 100 pupil school unless you do something that really kind of rocks the boat. And I hope, I'm pleased to have rocked the boat a little bit, but the boat seems to have stabilized too at some point. So it's good up to a level, but I totally take your point as well, Bradley, that being like super internet famous, you know, the kind of internet famous where you're on the news and in the newspapers for what you do on the internet, I don't think I would like to be that important.
So finish up, any regrets for the show? My main one is, let me clarify this. My probably favorite podcast of all time is Hypercritical on 5x5. I think John Siracusa is one of the most interesting people to listen to, that I know of. And I really love the Accidental Tech Podcast. The main reason is I feel like, there are aspects, like Casey is a really, really great guy. Casey Less, if you don't follow him, and Marco Ahmet, it seems like a really nice guy as well. And John seems really nice, and he's really, you know, they all have differing opinions. So I feel like in some ways they are all, I'm part of all three of them, because I see aspects of my personality in all three of them. So it's almost like when I listen to ATP, I'm listening to myself argue with myself, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I've always liked John's work and what he had to say. In Hypercritical, he researched topics in depthly and talked about them and basically criticize them is the kind of the premise of the show, but it was a really interesting show. And I still go back and listen to like old episodes today. And he really researched the topics well. And so I guess my biggest regret is that I wish I'd had more time or made more time to research topics in depth that I was not already familiar with, that I took something I knew nothing about and researched it enough to be able to argue for or against it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, although I think that also what, you know, and our expertise has kind of ebbed and flowed in terms of, you know, some shows I know more than you do, other shows you know much more than I do about the topic. But I think having that imbalance between the two of us has often produced a good show, because, you know, you educate me or I educate you. And, you know, Federico and I do this on Canvas as well, where sometimes it's a kind of shared show where each of us knows the same amount and we share telling people about it. But other times, you know, he'll come to the show and school me on something, and other days, you know, like we recently did a show about SSH, and he's like almost never used SSH, and I use it every day. So I you know, brought the education on that one. So I think that makes for a good show. And I think perhaps, you know, if I wanted to think about a regret or something that I think could have made the show better, is that we could have maybe disagreed with each other more. I think we see the world in a very similar way. And because of that, it's sort of like, you know, I'll say something and then you'll agree with me, and then you'll say something and I'll agree with you. And we don't end up getting into the same kind of argument, perhaps is the right word, that you maybe hear on other shows where people, the hosts do have. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, for example, you know, Ben Thompson and his co-host on the what's the name of that show, the one about, it's all about business models, totally blanking on it. Ben Thompson's podcast, right?
Exponent,
yeah, that's right. And he and his co-host, they often have like a real big argument on the show, and it's very enlightening because they're kind of really going back and forward at each other. But I think, you know, I suppose I'm not really that argumentative a person by nature, so I don't know if I would like to come and have an argument every week with you, Bradley, but I think that makes for good entertainment and sometimes illuminates thinking. But other times, you know, imagine if you went to a professional development event and the two people running the show were arguing with each other, you know, that would be kind of weird. So that balance is always there to kind of be struck. And I think we got it right most of the time, but it maybe wasn't as perhaps amusing as it could have been, or, you know, over the top as it could have been. But then that doesn't really reflect our personalities, I don't think, either.
Yeah, I would like to think that you and I were never really playing characters on the show. I listen to like sports talk radio, and you can just tell some of these guys are playing a character. And yeah, you know, it's
or you
like
watch Top Gear or something like that, you know, the Grand Tour.
It's like their personality, like, to the extreme. And
we've never done a bit for the show. You know, it's always whatever we bring to the show has always been our best thinking, our best understanding, our best knowledge, our deepest experience that we can find. And that's what we've always tried to bring to the show, I think. And that's what's made the show what it is, and how it's different from just two guys talking about tech.
I agree. That's all I've got on the outline for me. Any other thoughts on about our kind of flow or how we do things that you want to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, I kind of like how over the years we've got to a point where we don't really, you know, we don't schedule like who's going to speak next in the show notes. You know, I think that's, and we're getting better at that. We're just about good at it now, just as we finish. But, you know, on a show that's newer, like in Canvas, you know, Federico and I will actually put in the notes, you know, this is Fraser's section, this is Federico's section, and so on. So we kind of get the flow of the show correct. And at the moment, the way we're working together, the more we plan that, the better the show is. Whereas on this show, maybe people can tell, I don't know, but we're much more kind of extemporaneous as we go. And I think that also makes the show what it is as well, that we are two guys talking about tech, but we're trying to bring the best knowledge we can at all times as well.
Yeah, I guess that's what you get when you've done this for, gosh, I'd love to know like how many combined hours we've talked.
Well, if you add up the, well, we could probably figure that out. I'll maybe try and figure that out for the next show. There must be a way.
Yep. Yeah, there's going to be a way if you get the files. But all right, well, we've got two more episodes after this one, and then we will turn out the lights on Out of School. And so thanks for listening today. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Bradley Chambers, and my blog is chambersdaily.com.
Yep, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a good night, everybody.